our choice is Rebbe in Shiva Har Tzion, world-renowned, very sought-after speaker, someone who I know that I've got his America. I try to chase him down wherever he's speaking to hear from him, because I always find myself tremendously inspired, and I learned a tremendous amount from all of his words. It's a real opportunity to have Rebbe Tarragon with us, to share with us a little bit about
Talk about the first base of Mikdash.
This is the group that can handle
the hardest shear. So this is the hardest shear. I'm giving three shear today. This is, why is it so hard? Seriously. So what are the three events we are thinking about today? And I told the group beforehand, somehow the feel of the Sarbateves doesn't convey the same tragedy of Tisha B'Av and the same tragedy of Shabbat Sarbatamas. We've met before. What's your name?
Rachel
Schachter. Rachel what? Schachter. Right, I remember last time. You were very good. So, Rachel, what are the three events that happened in Asar Batavis?
Ezra Sofer died.
He didn't die tragically. And Nechemi also. In other words, it wasn't on the 10th of Tavis. It was in the month of Tavis. Several events happened. And when events in close proximity, these are three events in close proximity, when they double up in the same month, in this case, triple up in the same month, so it reminds us again, that history isn't random, that history is predetermined, history is cyclical, that Hashem chooses events and timing. It's very important to distinguish between Western civilization's view of history and our view of history. Western civilization views history as progressive, evolutionary, open-ended. Judaism views history as predetermined, cyclical, returning to its terminus. So when events happen in the same month, and they're not happy and joyous events, so let's dedicate this month, and they chose the day of the 10th of Tevet, because what is the worst event that happened, not just Ezra's death and Nehemiah's death, but siege started, the siege of Jerusalem of Nebuchadnezzar begun. Now that was tragic, because that led to the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. Ezra and Nehemiah died. It was the end of an era. There's nothing tragic. They weren't assassinated like Hidayah ben Achikam was. They just died. It was the end of the prophetic era. They were the last to be. There was a sense that the era had ended, and it was hard to replace. I was at Rabbi Soloveitchik's funeral. I remember it was a cold day. It was a sunny day like today. I was thinking about it today. I was in Boston. It was Pesach, Chol Moed Pesach. But I remember walking down that major avenue in Boston, and I just couldn't imagine a world without Rabbi Soloveitchik. It was just hard for me to make sense that the world could continue without Rabbi Soloveitchik in it. Then a couple years ago, when Rabbi Lichtenstein died, it was more visceral, because for myself, I didn't really have such a relationship with him. I learned a little bit in Shira, but wasn't seeing with my father. I mean, I spent 32 years with him. So it wasn't just I couldn't imagine the world without it. I was crying like a baby. I was a broken piece. I was a broken human being. I was sitting in the corner, just broken to pieces. But Ezra Nehemiah, and it wasn't just the end of an era, but it's also the end of the potential. Ezra Nehemiah, I'm sure you've studied, where they're going back, above it. But not really everyone. How many people came back with them? You studied? Anyone know? How many Jews returned from Babel with Ezra and Nehemiah? 42,000. Overwhelmingly, Jews stayed in Babel. And because of that timidity, the second Beis HaMikdash never got traction. Essentially, let me put it to you in first terms. Okay, if every Jew had come back with Ezra and Nehemiah, or at least the majority, we wouldn't be here now. History would have been totally different. Second Beis HaMikdash would have been Mashiach. And everything that's transpired over the last 2,000 years would have been, imagine you're in some movie and you can rewrite history and go back in the time machine. If every Jew leaves from Babel back to Israel, then that's Mashiach. Or says in Dallas, the Silva, the Virus, and they all come back, Hashem says, that would have been Mashiach. So everything we've experienced over the last 2,000 years is a mirage. It shouldn't have happened. It's an alternate time trajectory. Not Tinek, not Poland, not Spain, not Egypt, not Poland, not Morocco. All would have been in Israel, would have been back. We failed. The sad part is, we're trying to avoid that failure a second time. We're trying to get people back to Israel in larger numbers. Gemara says the reason they didn't come back to Israel is because there were two problems with life in Israel in those days. It was hard to earn a living and it was terror. Sounds a little familiar. We're trying to get back, we're trying to avoid. So it wasn't just that Ezra and Nehemiah died, but it was evidently that potential redemptive energy was lost. And now, we're going to live with whoever's in Israel. Most Jews will be in Babel. Most Jews will be in Persia. We'll be in Persia, Babel. That's it. So, Ezra Nehemiah died. The Beis HaMikdash wasn't really attacked, but Yerushalayim was encircled. The siege began. In ancient war, the siege is the first stage of the attack. And what was the third event?
Torah was translated.
Torah was translated to Greek. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? No. Or just there, we are.
Apparently bad.
Seems, right? Seems negative. And there were 2-3 days of darkness that had descended, and they knew that something was up. But in the grand scheme of things, we weren't the Torah's values to be disseminated across this globe. And translating Torah into Greek was really the first time that a foreign culture solicited our Torah and its information. They wanted to understand the Torah. They weren't translating it to burn it, they were translating it to study it. We corrupted it. That's why Chazal were worried about corruptions and distortions, but you can't have it both ways. If you want our Torah to spread, it's going to be corrupted and it's going to be distorted by other cultures. Christianity spread Torah. Strange word, right? It didn't spread Torah, it didn't spread Maseches Pesachim, or whatever you're learning, but it spread monotheism across the world in ways that we couldn't. Because we're just too busy learning Torah. Now, in order for it to spread, it has to study. In order for it to study, it's going to corrupt it. So Christianity corrupted Torah's values, and it eliminated halacha and so many other aspects. It corrupted the monotheism of Hashem's non-physicality. But essentially, it's better that people are Christians than they're idol worshippers, right? I'm a little bit distant. I don't have to suffer the cultural assault that you guys have to suffer. But when I go on planes and trains, I say Merry Christmas to stewardesses, because I don't really live Christmas the way you do. You live Christmas, you have to bury yourself against it. I don't live Christmas, I'm in Israel. I'm happy that there's Christmas. Because if it weren't Christmas, they'd be drinking each other's blood, eating each other's flesh, and worshiping planets and trees. I'm happy that they're thinking about a God who's distant. And okay, so there's this vestigial sense of paganism on the other side. Well, that's stupidity, ridiculous. But basically, I'm happy they're Christians. And I'm even happier that they're Muslims, because that's a pure blend of monotheism. So, translation of the Torah. Remember, this isn't translating the Torah by Indians and warriors. This is the Torah being translated by Greeks. Ptolemy was an Egyptian king who was a Greek-Egyptian. Basically, Greece was the first civilization. This is Torah's values warming its way into the first Greek civilization. Torah people were barbarians, there were savages, there were nomads that were killing each other. This is the first time that humanity built a civilization. And they're soliciting Torah. So, it's an interesting day because it's a day of two events that are not tragic, they're transformative, they're transitional. Beis HaMikdash is tragic. Now, the problem with the first Beis HaMikdash, especially if you don't study Tanakh, but even if you study Tanakh, it's really, really a long time ago. The people's lives were fundamentally different than they are today. So when we think about the second Beis HaMikdash, the Romans and the destruction, it's a little easier to lock into because we know who Rome was and what it stood for. And more or less, first Beis HaMikdash it's almost antediluvian. It's not pre-flood, but it's such a different world. So what I want to talk about with you on this day is, what happened? What happened in the first Beis HaMikdash? What went wrong in the first Beis HaMikdash? We know what went wrong in the second Beis HaMikdash, internal struggle and strife and disharmony and contention. But what went wrong? What was the collapse about? I want to talk to you about 5 things that happened in the first Beis HaMikdash and try to make them relevant. Obviously, if we want to study, we want to understand, we want to mourn the loss, because if the Beis HaMikdash hadn't failed, again, we'd still be in Eretz Yisrael. So even if we can't make it relevant for our world, it's still important to think about. But ultimately, there's got to be a takeaway from today. The fast is not just the fast and the need. It's to be a different person by 4 p.m. than you are at 10:30. How can you be a different person by filling your mind and heart and ideas and saying, yeah, how do I live my life? So the primary failure is, of course, the Bodhisattva. And we sometimes glorify the past. There was real rampant paganism. And what made it so offensive is that Hashem expected the relationship. Paganism is not just a theological error. It's a betrayal of our Israel. We're married to Hashem. And when we choose to place our emotions elsewhere, and diminish our interaction with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, especially with another God, then we're basically prostituting ourselves. and Yirmiyah picks up on this, not the Tanakh here. Yirmiyah, I'll just read some second. Yirmiyah is basically the Navi. If you have a couple hours today, finish Yirmiyah, go be Mishad, you know, Zim first. Yirmiyah is the prism through which the failures of the first day of Mikdash become evident in his Nebuah, in his messages. So in Yirmiyah, in Paragimel, and all over, I'm just going to read Paragimel to you. In Yirmiyah, Paragimel, and again, girls and boys, this is the hard share. I'm actually giving you a second of the other share, just talking to them. So try to listen to the Sukkim and hear what he says. In Paragimel, he says, Achein, Bagda Isha Merea, a woman has betrayed her husband. Kain begadetem bi, beis Yisrael, Yom Hashem. Now this pasuk appears dozens, not this particular pasuk, but this theme appears dozens of times a year. Achein begadetem bi, beis Yisrael. And that's interesting, because, and again, I'm trying to make it real. We don't live in a world of a little star. When's the last time you had an urge to worship a rock? When's the last time you looked at a planet and fly and bowed down? Part of it is because we live in a much more secularized world. Avodah Zarah is merely the glimmer of a world that's searching for God. We live in a world that we care less about God because we're too independent, we're too self-sufficient. In a scary, frightening, random world, people knew that their only hope for survival was to reach out to the other being and rely upon that other being. So if people are thirsting for divine interaction, they will locate divine essence in wrong and incorrect addresses, but at least they're thirsting. Said otherwise, in some ways, it's easier to be a firm Jew in the world of Avodah Zarah than to be a firm Jew in the secular agnostic city that we live, because everyone out there isn't talking about God. So we have to introduce Hashem into our conversation. If you go back into the days of the world of Avodah Zarah, everyone's looking for God, they're corrupting it, but at least there's a sense of religious thirst, looking, searching. Rav Ashi was once teaching his Talmid, everyone knows who Rav Ashi was, he compiled the Gemara. So one said, something to the tune of, tomorrow we'll study the King Menashe. You know who Menashe was? One of the worst. Murderer, idolater, first base on the fish. And he used some joking, almost comical term, tomorrow we'll study about our good friend Menashe. That night, Menashe came to Rav Ashi in a dream and said, you're very flippant about me, calling me your good friend, like in a sarcastic comment. Had you lived in my era, you would have been so tempted by Avodah Zarah. You, Rav Ashi, you would have kicked up your pant legs to run faster, your toga, to run faster to go worship Avodah Zarah. You can't imagine. Okay, so if you almost, the best way you can imagine it is, and I'm speaking to you maturely, so I don't want you to feel, but I do want to treat you as mature young adults. If you imagine the sexual desires that are so rampant in our world, that's how powerful Avodah Zarah was. Because desires are never physical, they're always psychological. It's also college. And if you really want to change your desires and change your behavior, you got to get deep into the core of what drives the expression, not the expression. You just deal with the expressions and deal with the symptoms. It's like you're sick and you're taking Tylenol. You're not dealing with the infection. It's all, and it's really important. I know you guys are serious. You guys, your goals are serious. If you really want to make change, you got to know yourself. And you got to be able to trace, why do I keep falling to these habitual behaviors? What's driving it? What's the deep psychology? And sometimes the psychology is very different than manifestation. It could be it's why it's so important to know yourself and to share your feelings with your friends and your teachers, because it can help you know yourself better and to read so that you can learn about the world. And when you learn about the world, you can learn about yourself. They're really important parts, because the more you know yourself, the more you can actually make authentic change rather than what I call a mascara change. I'll throw on a pair of sixes or throw on a long skirt and I'll be fucking. That fades. Be a real person and be real of it, and let's say it's important. Don't get me wrong, you can't solve yourself by just covering it up. You have to work it through and just be a healthier person. So it was a different world of Avodah Zarah, and it was a world that was more religious. But what I'd like you guys to think about, I say guys and girls, I mean both, is they were castigated because they prostituted themselves and betrayed the marriage with Hashem. Do you even have a marriage with Hashem? Do you feel that relationship with Hashem? Or not marriage, but any relationship with Hashem? Because in other parts, they're compared to Ben Sarer or Moriah. So if you take a look at the Parakeh, and instead of being too young to be thinking about marriage, but you're thinking Parakeh, with the Parakeh, apologize, but I just want to read these psukim for you. Bila'am hazeh, Yirmiyah says, Hayalev sorer umore, sarubayalech. Sound familiar? Sorer umore. So now we're being prepared for children. Namely, can you take HaKadosh Baruch Hu from some distant God up in heaven who created the world, redeems the Jewish people, and changes history? Do you have a relationship with Hashem? Can you, said otherwise, superimpose human relationships to Hashem? He wants you to, because that's who we are as people. We feel emotions, we interact with people. I have a wife, or Hashem. I have children. I have friends. So I know what it's like to be a friend. I know what it's like to be in a marriage. I know what it's like to be a father or to be a child. Can I take that very deep part of my life and move it over to my relationship with Hashem and say, well, he's my father, and I'm his wife, and I'm his child, and feel Hashem the same way I feel my wife, my child, my father? Or even if you don't superimpose a human relationship, but how often do you think about Hashem? If you ask Rabbi Gardner once, I imagine, one of his takeaways, I hope, I can guarantee you, of having Rav Lichtenstein or Rav Amital as his Rebbeim is, just felt Hashem in the room. It was just unmistakable. You just, they carry that sense that Kodesh Baruch Hu was with them in the room. So it's like they walked Hashem into the room for you. And that's what real Avodas Hashem is. Not just activities, ritual, ceremony. Live with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, live with that sense. And again, you're young, you're a teenager, start to, you feel a minute a day when you dive in, that 1 minute in davening, you're standing in front of the Kisei cover. So they prostituted and betrayed the relationship with Hashem, and we sterilized it and anesthetized it, and we cauterized it. It's totally dead as far as we're concerned. And we go about our religion, our ritual, and traditions, but we don't really feel Hashem. Second issue on the first base of Mikdash. Yirmiyah, go back to Parak Beis. Listen to Parak Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, a little Tanakh, you can get credit for Tanakh for today. Yirmiyah Parak Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Kishayim ra'os asa ami. They've committed a double crime. Osi azvu mikar mayim chayim. They've forsaken me as the source of their water. Lachatzov lahem be'aros be'aros dishvarim, but they dug other wells. Not only did we forsake Hashem, but we became over-reliant on foreign cultures. We thought that the general geopolitics would save us. And in particular, it was Mitzrayim, our sworn enemy, who we thought we had left behind, about whom there's a prohibition to return to Egypt. And not so incidentally, who started the Mitzrayim parade, who started this over-reliance of Mitzrayim, which was so offensive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was it? Who married an Egyptian wife? The night of the inauguration of Beis HaMikdash, he's busy with his marriage to an Egyptian wife, and he oversleeps the next day because, who's that? It's just such an iconic moment. Shlomo Melech possesses the potential for redemption, and he's building the Beis HaMikdash, and history's going to end. Beis HaMikdash, it's here. And he marries an Egyptian. And then his son splits the kingdom, and all goes south. Or north. North and south. Right. Marries an Egyptian wife. And what's fascinating about it, and sad, is that does Jew. See, David and Shlomo committed the same crime, more or less. But David was adultery, and Shlomo was an Egyptian wife. It's the same realm. Shlomo wasn't skimming money from the treasure. It was the same area of sexual impropriety. But David HaMelech woke up the next morning and looked in the mirror and saw a monster and wrote Tehillim. And Shlomo justified it diplomatically. So much of growth is just accepting guilt. Guilt is such a beautiful moment in your life. Don't let it become oppressive. Don't let it run you into the ground. But feeling guilty is such a beautiful emotional moment of duty and conscience and awareness and accepting your failure and owning it and recovering from it. I can't tell you how beautiful. It's better than going to a wedding and get rid of it. It's better than celebrating. In celebration, it's a shallow, not shallow, but it's just, it repeats itself. Guilt is a recovery process. Yehuda teaches us about guilt. He's standing there, to let Tamar, he burned the line, and he says, I'll take it. That's when he becomes the leader. The best gift I can give you, the best gift any adult can give you, the best gift that Rabbi Karin Schwartz can give you, is to say, I'm sorry. He said, just teach you that there's nothing wrong with failing. It's human to fail. And so many people try to fictionalize themselves away from failure and try to spin narratives to deny failure, to justify that I'm not really responsible. The sooner you can just, I could get paid $1 million if I just went to the incorporation, basic corporate culture. Basic corporate culture is just say you're wrong and move on. Take responsibility. You can't run a culture, you can't run a corporation or organization if you're going to show void blank. Because then there's no accounting and there's no correction. Okay, move on. Now move on. Now I'll be covered. Now I'll ask yourself the following question. Don't answer the question for me because I don't want to become too personal. How many times have you seen adults in your life that you respect just say, I'm wrong and apologize? If you've seen it a lot, you're a healthier person. If you've seen it infrequently, then try to find people healthy. I was very careful with my children. Whenever I did something wrong, just to fess up with it. I'm sorry. Even when I didn't do it wrong, I went to almost overcompensate and give them a lesson. There's nothing wrong with failing. There's nothing wrong with coming up short. There's nothing wrong with it. Just say, I'm sorry, in a sincere way, apologize, and correct yourself. You don't get that in Shlomo. Everyone's an Einstein when it comes to self-justification. Well, I need to, this is diplomacy, Egypt's a powerful force, I have to marry the queens, so that better relations. No, this is an Egyptian wife. And the Jews are always mesmerized by the geopolitics around them. The third parak of Eicha is about the death of Yoshiyahu, who was the last white hope, the last great hope, one of the later kings who had this great redemptive potential. Anyone know how Yoshiyahu died? Fighting a war that wasn't his business. Who was the war between? Asher and Messiah. And the Nevi'im begged him, stay out of it. He cares. Get involved. Somehow, we have to find, threading a needle to a pin. We gotta find a way to be engaged in geopolitics because we have to make efforts. But realize it's all just a show. History is being driven by moral energy, Jewish dedication, and divine intervention. And whatever Trump says or doesn't say, and whatever Hamas says or doesn't say, whatever happens or doesn't happen, there's something deeper than politics. And listen carefully, because you're living in ground zero for political activism. AIPAC and NORPAC and HIPAC and TPAC. It's important. I'm not mocking you, chas v'shalom. Don't get obsessed with it. That's not where history is being changed. It's important because it modifies it on the margins, it changes history. But trust me, I'm doing a lot more for history by raising my family in a long split and sending my children to the army and studying the block tomorrow and coming to Davin on time and davening for Yerushalayim. That's worth 100 knockouts. I can guarantee you that. And they're both important. I remember once, my parents, thank God, now live in Israel. I remember once during the throes of the Intifada, and it was a very terrible, tragic terror incident. And I was speaking to my parents said, you know, tonight Arafat was on, I don't know, some interview talk show, Nightline or something, and he was facing off against an Israeli ambassador. And evidently, the Israeli ambassador came up very positively, and Arafat made a fool of himself, and all the polls for Israel surged. Who cares? Like, what difference does that make? That in the American public opinion, the poll surge on behalf of Israel. Okay, so long term it's important, we should work for it, but right, there's a terrorism that they're not going to do this. I'm going to kill people that are trying to raise their lives. So somehow we've got to find that balance between the Mitzrayans and the Ashurs and the Babels of the world and be part of them because That's what Hashem expects of us. Ruach comes encased in geopolitics. But we can't become obsessed with it and forget that we're Shlomo HaMelech. We can't marry politics. We can't marry Egyptian wives. See, I'm trying to take these little touchstones of the first base and make this. I'm assuming, what's your name? I assume you don't have an Egyptian girl. How is that going to marry Egyptian wife? The question is, are they, what are the Egypts in today's world? What are the equivalents of that deal? What's our time? How much longer do we have?
I know it's 7 minutes. Go ahead. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
7 minutes?
I'll tell you.
Okay. Number three. And you pick this up from Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah is terrified. Hashem sends him. She's frightened. And Hashem has to tell him, this is Yirmiyah Paragala Pasuk Ches, Al Tira Mifnehem, don't worry. Ki Itcha Ani Lehatzilecha. Why is Yirmiyah worried? You know why Yirmiyah is worried? Because people in the first base of Mikdash hated moral rebuke so much that if you dared rebuke them, you know what they did to you? They killed you. Which two of them were killed in the first base of Mikdash? Well, one of them we speak about on Tisha B'Av. Anyone know? Zechariah, not the Zechariah, say for Zechariah, different Zechariah. Zechariah, another name Zechariah, other Zechariah, was killed in the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbos, Yom Kippur. You had to be a lunatic to kill a Navi in the Beit HaMikdash, kill him in fresh. You know, kill a janitor, wait for after Yom Kippur, maybe not Shabbos. Like, what type of psychopathic hatred does it take to kill a Navi in the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbos Yom Kippur? When you just shut down, you don't want to listen to people. And then when they try to challenge you and blow a whistle in your face, you get angry. And you don't do anything. You don't express that hatred. Then they killed a different Navi named Uriah. Famous Navi named Makos. And Uriah is quaking his boots. And he was arrested, actually. Wasn't killed, he was escaped miraculously. He was always killed. So, a good reason to be afraid. That's the third failure of the first base of Mikdash. You just don't want to listen to people and more than that. You're in the phase now, and you're probably starting to think about your friends. In your ninth grade and tenth grade, you're friendly with whoever lives down the block, whoever your parents are friendly with, you get together on Shabbos. Now you're choosing friends, you're building social networks. I wish you have friends. I wish you at some point you have friends that can actually tell you something morally and religiously and that really value their opinion. That's a good friend. That's so important. And in Rosh Hashanah, when you get married, it's even more important. When you look for a wife, when you look for a husband, try to bring someone who adores you, but also knows how to challenge you. Say, I love you so much. It's not trying to break you down. Don't think I'm an axe to grind or I'm trying to make you less, but you could really be better if this is better. I expect more. Another personal question. Remember I asked you a few minutes ago, how many times adults in your life have apologized to you? Here's another question. Think about the adults in your life. How many of them have moral authorities that actually listen very, very carefully to you, too? And how many of them are self-arbitrators? I'm not asking for answers, I'm asking for questions. So many people today live as independent, moral self-arbitrators. I don't need to listen to this rabbi. I don't need to listen to that. I know better. I know myself. I know. Because it's the bastard child of democracy. Everyone's got their own vote. Everyone's got their own opinion. Why should they be? The hierarchies are falling. So when hierarchies fall, not just the political and social hierarchies fall, the moral hierarchies fall. That's a problem. We want moral hierarchy. We don't want political hierarchy. We want moral hierarchy. Tough to keep up. Democracy is a great, I vote is ever hard day. We worship it so deeply. July 4th is the Yom Ha'ei day. It has led to so many moral fallouts, moral relativism. They're not terrorists or homicidal murderers. They're freedom fighters. You can see it from their perspective. That's the fallout of democracy. Because if everyone has one equal vote in the ballot box, if they have an equal opinion, can more conversation. And that's not true. There's right and wrong. There's black and white. There's good and evil. Be careful about democracy. We support it. We're happy. We're thrilled. But it's the best one where government units have been able to cobble together. But it carries its own moral boundaries. not sit there and worship at the altar of the Makkah, because you're back to the paganism of this place of Mikdash. See, here's a really good question to think about today. Who do you listen to? Which person, if they told you, you know, I really want you to improve this, I really want you to change that, would you go to take it to heart and say, a lot of people don't have that. The Rambam writes, and that's what's true. Okay? That one of the
Maybe it's going to please come to Mrs.
Kier's
office.
Maybe
it's going to please come to Mrs.
Kier's
office now.
Then he says, it's not tshuva. It actually prevents tshuva. He's someone who is so neat to chacha, someone who hates info. It's hard. In this stage of life.
If I look through the police commissioner's office, Morgan Lazarus, Nicole Carbon.
We have one more minute.
Danny Haber. Yeah.
But I'm not sure I can guarantee that there won't be this throughout the day.
Okay. Let me read you one final pasuk. Okay, I'll give you a fourth challenge today. Let's repeat our challenges. Challenge number one, relationship with Hashem. Challenge number two, not to get over obsessed with pure politics. Challenge number three, enjoy people who challenge you and rebuke you. Challenge number four, Yirmiyah, Perek Zayin. Okay, a nice specific from Yirmiyah. You'll be responsible for this. Perek Zayin. That's right, Perek Zayin, not a listen. Al tiftechu lachem, Yirmiyah says. El divrei hashaker. Lamar, don't think that when all these threats that you are able to identify because of your failures, you'll say, Lamar, you listen to this pasuk. This is a real pasuk. Don't say, Heichal Hashem. Heichal Hashem. Heichal Hashem, Heima. You've heard this pasuk? Incredible pasuk. Al tomar, Heichal Hashem. Heichal Hashem. What is this? This is over-reliance on divine assistance. Oh, we have the base of Mikdash. We're invulnerable. We're invincible. We have the base of Mikdash. We have the world. Nothing can happen to us. Bulletproof. Heichal Hashem. Heichal Hashem. What can happen? Heichal Hashem. The base of Mikdash. A little bit of that today. State of Israel. Reishit Smichas Gula Seinu. Sahal. Kosel. Unbelievable. Can't fail. Escape through history. Don't have to worry about ourselves. That's the same. It's 2018. History has changed. But the same careful growth that took place in 1918 as the place of 2018. How's your tefillah? How's your mitzvos? How's your Yerushalayim? Again, I want to treat you like a dog. I'm going to tell you something really, really sad. Listen carefully. Sometimes, ironically, when people move to Israel, the family becomes less religious. And the children have a harder time. And part of it is, we're in Israel. Let down our garden. We're in Israel. What can happen? We're in Israel. 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 Say it 10 times. You rid yourself, nothing else exists. I love Israel. Don't get me wrong. I live in Israel. I teach in Hasbi Yeshiva. My son, Shafi Givati. But Israel can sometimes suck all the air out of the conversation. The semi-quote, it's all Sindhidos, and Babylon, and Staka, and Yerushalayim, and Kamatara, and Kurta, and Mikra, and Karpet. And anything the two should cross holiday. Now that we're back in Israel, we have to be even more excited to learn Torah right before Mitzvah, so, because it's in our homeland, because it has historical impact. So who would have thought there were four first day Samikdash challenges for you to work on for the next 5 hours? One is your relationship with Hashem. Two is stop the obsession with geopolitics. Three is listen. Listen to people who say hard things, not to who gratify and validate what you are. Listen to people who challenge you more. Four, be in Israel, live in Israel. There's a lot underneath the Israel fences. Okay, girls and guys, meaningful fast, work on it, be a different person today. I love seeing you guys and coming back as often as I can. So we'll see you over to them in 2 months. And that I expect to be
honest. I have another period today, so I'll check you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I don't know. I really don't believe in, like, how, at least the rabbi who speaks to